previously on getting the mecha. Decisions are quite important because the decisions made now are ones which are leading all up to the endgame. This part of the show feels like the beginning of the end, or if anything it's the middle, because it determines, or it looks like it will be trying to determine how the rest of the show flows. This arc gives me the faith that I need going forward into the rest of Attack on Titan, and hopefully the final arc and the Marley arc is a good one. This is Getting the Mecha, the weekly anime and manga show where we take things one step further. I analyze everything from arcs to OPs to episodes in my wacky but enjoyable quest to make sense of all of it. Welcome back to Getting the Mecha. I'm your host Jamal today, and in today's episode we are discussing the Battle of the Trost District arc of Attack on Titan. I know it is Christmas Day, but who cares, because it's time for some more analysis. You're not going to get this on Christmas Day. This will be the last episode of 2019 though. And I just want to say thank you for the support for the podcast overall. We are still quite new, but I've experienced some really fun times in the past few months since August. So again, thank you so much for your support. And anyway, back to Attack on Titan. What we will be doing today is we'll be taking a look into this main debate, I think, that is covered by the Battle of the Trost District arc, this idea of rationality and instinctual behavior. I want to kind of break that down a bit, talk about what I think about it, and then just look at some technicalities and the general impression I get from this arc. If you do enjoy the show, feel free to give it a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. Tell me how you think of it. And it does help me make the show better and helps other people see the show as well. So that would be really appreciated. Speaking of reviews, we have a 5-star review, and I'll just read that out, from Ashton James Brown. He says, an underrated gem. Solo podcasts are a curious thing. Most podcasts rely on the interplay between two hosts to engage listeners. However, GITM in no way needs this. The host, Jamal, is an engaging and knowledgeable on the subject of anime, and his insightful analysis of anime tropes and trends makes for entertaining stuff. If you are an otaku, add this pod to your subscription list. You won't regret it. Thank you so much, Ashton, for leaving a 5-star review. It means so much. And if you do enjoy the podcast, feel free to leave it a review and I can read it out. It's a really nice thing to do. It makes me feel good. Hopefully it makes you feel good as well. So thank you, Ash, and share the love of Get in the Mecha. Anyway, here is the episode for this week. That is episode 24 of Get in the Mecha, the Battle of the Trost District arc. Before we get into analysis, as usual, I notify you guys about spoilers. There will be spoilers in today's episode, and that covers episodes 5 to 13 of Attack on Titan Season 1, or if you're reading the manga, be sure to check the show notes. I have the link to the fandom page or the wiki page where I put the story arcs, so you can check which chapters those are if you are referring to Attack on Titan through the manga. The Trost arc, as I'll be calling it throughout today's episode because I'm really not bothered to say Battle of the Trost District arc throughout. So the Trost District arc is the first arc we get set in the modern day of Attack on Titan or Shingeki no Kyojin. And I think its main purpose is to show us the bleak reality, or show us the ropes of the military operations, and imply that they are not ones to be glamorized at all. If anything, these are probably some of the most brutal military operations you can carry out, taking down the Titans. It also shows us what really is at stake and what is a priority. Humanity's main principle or priority at the moment is defeating the Titans and preventing them from invading the Eldian Empire. So essentially, humanity's survival. And with that, let's get to a plot summary of the Battle of the Trost District arc. The Eldian Empire, by nature, is one that is constantly pillaged by Titans, as the nature of the walls entails that Titans can attack from almost every side, as these are almost a round network of walls. The Trost District arc, as implied, takes place in the Tross District, one that is located on the south edge of Warrose. This is probably one of the most vulnerable districts due to the fact that it is right on the edge of the Eldian Empire, and only Warmaria is there to protect it. Additionally, our story follows our main character, Eren Yeager, through his journey through the military. Born March 30th in Shiganshina, Eren has had a tough start in life. His mother, Carla Yeager, died to a Titan attack in the year 845 in the Shiganshina district of which they lived, and Eren's only memory of his father is one of which sees him desperately injecting some form of serum within to him. Since then, he has only gone missing. If we jump back to modern day, Eren Yeager has now become a member of the 104th Training Corps, and now has been thrown right into the deep end in the Tross District, with the one mission of defeating these titans which seem to be invading Warmaria. Beside him, he has some familiar faces, two of his childhood friends from Shiganshina, Armin and Mikasa. So the three of them are now at death's doorstep within the Tross District, meeting and fighting titans for the first time in their career in the military. So this opens up this main debate which I want to discuss from this arc. It's probably the main sort of component I think that comes out of it, and that's this idea of rationality and instinctual behavior. When I say rationality, I basically just mean it in terms of using logic in order to navigate around a military situation or a conflict situation, instead of instincts or instinctual behavior, which would be more around sort of working upon your fears and emotions in order to tackle the main problem. Instinctual behavior, I think, is a big thing. I think this entire debate is one that's quite large throughout the entire show, but instinct is a big thing because, as we know within this arc, we have a Titan transformation that is kind of based upon instinct as opposed to rationality, you can argue. And then we have this other notion of logic which comes out of being a part of the military. So tactics and navigating around the walls, how we approach the Titans, where we attack the Titans, how we attack the Titans, those sort of things are what come out of this arc. And throughout the entire show, I think it's mostly more important here though because it's first introduced as opposed to a long-running debate. It's the first time we see it and it's almost very distinct between the two because they are so new to this situation. I would mostly define the attacks from most of the characters, presumably or mostly Eren Yeager, as someone who almost lacks rationality or rationale behind his attacks. It's simply based on this one notion that I want to kill all the Titans. Although that is more of a message that is said towards the end of the arc, we kind of have this idea or long-running idea that that is sort of his goal. And when you consider the nature of Attack on Titan, it's hard to really say that there is any other goal. Again, we have the benefit of hindsight here, but even so, the main goal is defeat these Titans that are destroying the Empire. So what else would Eren's goal be, being a part of the military and all of that in his past? So a character like Eren Yeager seems to attack, or at least tackle these situations based on his psychological disposition. So when he's almost out of place, or not feeling correct, that can be a variety of factors. So that can be anything from his teammates are in trouble, he is obviously in a bad spot, those sorts of things. That is what stimulates or triggers that. That's sort of what stimulates or triggers that fight or flight response, usually being the fight response. And as a result, it results in these sort of radical decisions being made, going as far as ending up within a Titan's mouth within the early stages of the arc. He doesn't really tend to make what you could define as pragmatic decisions, so ones which are based around military orders, or ones that make sense in this nature of combat or this sort of battlefield. What I would define a pragmatic decision to be in regards to a military conflict to be something like deciding to sacrifice a friend for the sake of advancing further and then defeating that Titan because they're distracted, for example. Or just something that makes more sense and is less likely to jeopardize the mission objective. Eren doesn't see that yet. He doesn't really have that lens in place. that component isn't really instilled within him, and therefore he bases his decisions off his greatest fears and emotions and those things that control civilians, but not the emotions or the ideas or notions which should be within a military person. Those are 845 Eren still within him now, but he needs to act like a soldier, and he doesn't really connect the dots as of yet. The Battle of the Tross Districts, or the Tross Dark, I think is important when we consider this, because it's about, or it at least captures this phase of their lives, or their careers in the military at least, or just this part of the narrative, where our characters haven't been poisoned yet. They haven't been poisoned by this harsh and very hard-hitting reality that not everybody can survive, and not everybody will be able to discover what is outside the walls. Freedom is not a thing that everybody has access to. Not everybody has access to everything. I think those are sort of the fundamental things that they haven't really discovered yet, not just because of their youth, but because they just haven't been exposed to it yet, and they haven't been exposed to these great trials which they have to go through. So this is only the start of this large and working progress idea. I want to offer a bit of a counter argument though. I pride myself, or at least try to, within the podcast, when we debate something like this, usually two sides. I don't try to be completely objective and lean on one side all the time. I like to give you guys something else, maybe to mix up the debate. And this arc serves us very well for a counter argument, and that would be Mikasa and her role. In fact, if anything, Mikasa's role is mixed. I would say she has already been poisoned by this idea that the world is cruel, or as she says, this world is cruel. I quote that from her. She kind of adds this human nature component into things, and she understands that the world has been cursed by sort of imperfection and these notions that things aren't particularly going to get better. She acknowledges that, accepts it, and then uses that to sort of drive pragmatic military decisions that are more important for the team and the mission objective. So just to slightly go a bit backwards, I discuss how she's a mix. So obviously there is an element of non-rationality, or at least her acting in terms of psychological disposition. The area which we can discuss that in, or at least the part of this arc which we can talk about that, is the scene which we get a greater understanding as to Mikasa's childhood and how that sort of poison, which I discuss, was implemented. So Mikasa's sort of first kill, not of a titan, but of an actual human, when I believe that their house gets raided, and then Eren and Grisha, from when they were much younger, come into the house afterwards. But I think the imagery was really good in showing that. You get her brain basically fired up, almost electrocuted. It's fueled with this drive to kill, but for the sake of doing it because she has no other option. It's this idea of fight, you must fight. I would tend to say that's not rational. If anything, it's kind of like this overriding force upon her. And again, we are in hindsight, and that is a bit more explained as we go further into the show. But as of now, it can be perceived more as a fight or flight response. But then the argument, or the debate that comes out of that, the sort of a micro debate, is whether that is defined as rationality. The imagery of her brain, you can argue, is one which is coming out of, I must survive, and therefore it's a pragmatic decision, or at least a logical decision, to kill the person which potentially will kill you. Or again, is it one which is done out of a reaction, or is it a reactionary approach? I guess I can only leave you to decide that. I personally don't think it's rational, but then again, you can read it either way, and I've said this already, we have hindsight, so that's slightly more explained, and that's probably why I'm maybe a bit more biased towards that side. I want to talk a bit about the other side, and I think that is what I just mentioned before, and that's how Mikasa is a lot more aware of her surroundings. She's a lot more self-aware, and understands that her role is quite important within this Trost battle. I think Mikasa throughout Attack on Titan is a very driven character. She does play on emotions quite a lot. I think we get that a bit more in, say, the Return to Shiganshina arc, and when we look further on. However, at this stage in Attack on Titan, I wouldn't say that Mikasa... She's almost the reverse of Eren, that's what I will say. She's almost the reverse engineered edition in how it's mission before emotions, but once the emotions set in, those still are sort of an overriding factor. I think it's quite smart in how that's written, because we get that learning process already mapped out for someone like her. She's experienced that. And then we contrast it to Erin. And although Erin has experienced something like loss before, or at least an understanding of maybe bloodlust, it's not one that has been materialized within him. He hasn't actively had to go out and kill somebody yet. Mikasa has had to do it. She's had to pick up the sword, if I want to use like religious terms it. She's had to pick up the sword, or in this case, a knife, and do what she has to do. Someone like Eren has only experienced but hasn't done the reverse. He hasn't done the taking yet. He doesn't know how that feels. And so he's still maybe within his own bubble. He hasn't been exposed to the fact that he has to actively do things that are destructive, or actively do things that he might not consider correct in his moral code. Again, that's a bit weird, because if you define killing titans as a moral code, it's a bit iffy. So I'm not going to go into morality and killing titans, because that can be a whole other episode that probably wouldn't make sense. I do want to move on though. There's a bit of imagery, or not really imagery, but there's a bit of a discussion on human nature. It's not overt, it's not Evangelion overt, it's not really a commentary on human nature, but there are some things that tease it out. There's this quote from Kits Vermin. He says, "When push comes to shove, all of us are monsters. In our toughest times, we're all these dark creatures. We're naturally untamed, we are naturally unhinged and destructive." We can argue that, and Eren's Titan transformation might be proof for that, actually. Although he is saying that sort of more nuance towards Titans, which makes sense, and Titan Transformers or Titan Morphers, whatever you want to call them, although he is referring to that, I think that can apply to the wider show as well. We see characters like Levi, and in his state, in his natural unhinged state, where it's with the intent of survival and survival only, he's an absolute beast. And we can go on and on and say for almost every character within their unhinged state, or within a state where nothing else matters. They have nothing restricting them. They don't have law really restricting them. They don't have authority restricting them, because Levi technically is partially authority. And even when authority is broken down and the kings and queens don't really have so much influence within this society, people can act how they want if it's for the sake of this greater good. And so I think Kits Vermin's kind of right in this case. And obviously, Eren Yeager is the ultimate proof to his point. He did say in reference to him, but yeah, almost this unlimited power. I don't want to say unlimited, because that gets into some power level debates, which I don't even want to introduce when it comes to Attack on Titan, but a power that is completely off the charts to the military power we have within the show. It's a power we never expected, and so maybe Kits Vermin is referencing how almost anybody has the potential to be completely crazy and off the charts. Eren, again, proof of that. I don't think he's saying, oh, if anybody can be a Titan. Yeah, I don't think he's referencing something like anybody has Titan power, but anybody has the ability to sort of manifest the unexpected and go way beyond what we initially thought they could possess. I think that stands for the entire show, and it's something that will definitely be returned to, or at least something that will be referenced back to the further we get within Attack on Titan. I want to talk a bit more about some story elements, which are in the show at the moment. I think I'm kind of done on this rationality debate. We'll return slightly back to it later within the episode. However, I want to talk a bit about this thing on planting seeds. In almost every Attack on Titan episode you've listened to on the podcast, I must have spoken about Iyesama and his writing style and how he likes to plant seeds really early within the narrative and then return to them. It creates a shock factor because it hasn't been visited for a long time. And the sort of slow bits of development, I want to maybe push back from the term development, because that can be used in multiple ways, but there are ways of bolstering up that idea. So main example, the key is introduced in this arc and is sort of teased along the way of its existence and its relevance, and then it's utilized later on. The same applies to these ideas that Grisha Yeager and Eren push within this arc, being the Battle of the Trost. we're sort of bound to this deterministic idea that we must get to the cellar within this part of the show. And I quote from Grisha Yeager, "This journey will be a painful one, but it is yours to make. Everyone's life hinges on you being able to control this power." Reading that from my notes, I don't know if the translation is 100% correct, but that is kind of, I understand what it's coming from, where it's coming from. It's tying us to this, that we are going to get to this one place. And it starts so early, considering this is the first main arc of the show. This starts from episode 5, if I'm not wrong. I said that in the episode, now I completely forgot. Silly me. Anyway, so this comes from so early within the show, considering we have a lot more to go. We have almost 3 arcs before getting to the return to Shiganshina, if not 4. We have Female Titan, we have Clash of the Titans, and we have Uprising, and then Shiganshina. So there is a long, long time to go, and planting that here, I think, is a really good move. It sets us one up to get there, so creating the map for us to go down this long route. But also, it's nice that it's planted here and not planted right before something happens. I say that because, although, yeah, it sets up the map, but also it's something that we kind of lose sight of as we go further in, because there's so many problems and dilemmas and disruptions that take place further within the narrative that, if I'm honest, for me, at least personally, you kind of forget about it sometimes, or sometimes it's in the back of your head because there are so many things going on, and then you're like, oh yeah, there's this we have to do. Oh crap, we have to really go to the cellar. So I do like how it's placed very much at the beginning, rather than something that, you know, just pops up and it's like, oh, we need to do this, and then it's solved. It's a long-term mission that drives things, but sort of indirectly. It's not the direct driver for the entire show, because there are too many problems at the moment with these Titans. So it's nice to have like a background influence behind the story or the narrative. I did write in my notes that you can argue, and I say argue, that Grisha's choice or words are arguably pragmatic as well, or at least are rational in how they point towards sacrifice. They point towards doing something for the greater good, doing something for the greater good of man, and not particularly for, you know, narcissistic purposes, not for hedonistic purposes, for pleasure. It's one which isn't really based on emotion, you can argue, although the way he does deliver it does say something completely different. The conflict is a very big one within this arc between rationality and sort of ideology, or, you know, fear. It's a good balance that I like. It's not really objective though. So I guess to conclude this larger debate on rationality and instinct, I would say that within this arc, it's balanced. It's not one or the other. That might have been a bit of a "it's the friends we met on the way" response, and maybe it is, but we can't really just put it on one. I'd love to hear what anyone has to say on whether it is one or the other. You know, there's Twitter, there's my email, you can check that out. Tell me what you think about this debate, rational or instinct. How do they act in Attack on Titan? Or do you think it's a mixture of both like me? I think it does lean towards instincts, but it's reinforced by logic, and we have to use that strength we get from our emotions within sort of a military framework. That was a good conversation, or at least a good talk about this theme, I think. Let's go to the Link the VA segment for this week. As usual, the Link the VA segment is very simple. All I do is that I go onto my anime list, look at the show which we're looking at this time, Attack on Titan first season, and then what I do is I find the voice actors, find one of them or one of the roles, and then look at the variety of other roles which they play within anime. This time, I've had this trend at looking at dub actors. I usually look at Japanese voice actors. If I can't find anything that I think is entirely interesting according to what I've watched, then I'll go to dub actors, and this time I've done that very same thing once again. This time we're looking at Trina Nishimura, and Trina Nishimura plays Mikasa in Attack on Titan. quite a prominent voice actor. I haven't heard of her personally, but quite a prominent voice actor in the dubbing world. This time I'm not going to say as you usually do. They play a variety of roles. So I'm switching things up here. I'm putting some effort into this thing. Anyway, so who does she play? And the first one I want to get to is Kurisu Makise from Steins Gate. Usually when it comes to, I'm not adding to the sub versus dub argument, I don't really care for it, but I usually just listen to sub and that's it. I don't really go to see, oh, this is what the dub sounds like. I just don't know most of the time. So when I'm looking at this, it's pretty much blind. I'll just go onto YouTube, find a clip, and just listen to it for about a minute or two, get a feel for the voice. I kind of like this Kurisu voice. It's the feisty tone that I kind of once thought of. Although I would say when it comes to dub actors, or at least Japanese voice actors, I feel like they're a lot quieter, so they feel a bit more subtle when they're speaking. Versus Americans, which are a bit more usually like this all the time. So it's kind of that. And that's not a criticism. I do like it. I always thought of Kurisu to be kind of feisty, slightly more on the annoying side, you know, tsundere stuff. Personally, if you ask me, I'm not very pro tsundere, but I can respect it, I guess. So really good voice from kind of what I expected from the character, and it's good to see some personality come through. I also heard Okabe's voice through that clip. Not the biggest fan, but that can come for another episode if we do encounter him again. This segment's actually going to be kind of short because I only have two voices for this one, which I really want to zoom in on. This second one is Lanfan from Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. I don't want to get into the origins of Lanfan, mostly because I'm not really trying to spoil other anime in an Attack on Titan episode, which is already partially full of spoilers. So Lanfan, I like this one. This one is almost similar to Kurisu Makise, it's just what I expected. And same thing, they're mostly a bit less subtle, but I think that's just because that's how American accents sound in general, and Japanese accents I feel a lot more subtle and less, you know, shouty or full, if that makes sense. I think it sounds a bit more subdued. I don't know if that even makes sense. Hopefully you understand what I'm saying. It's just a lot calmer. Although there is still panic in the voice, but I think you can panic and still not be 100% too loud, or you can be quite loud but not, you know, over the top. So excuse my weird demonstration. That's kind of what I'm trying to get at. But for just to summarize this week's Link the VA, I'm happy with these voices. It wasn't a big one, but for sure it did have some good voice acting. So that was just a bit of a stopgap. Let's get back to the show. I want to talk a bit about some of the technicalities or the technical stuff which come from the Trost District arc. Then we can do some closing thoughts. Also, I want to speak a bit about some things I've been reading on the Indie Moments segment, and then we can wrap up the show. So this has been the Lengthy VA segment for this week. There was one more thing I wanted to discuss, which I should have said in the part before Lengthy VA. There's just one thing I just saw in my notes now that I think I forgot, but I also think it's quite important and valuable. That's about Eren being treated like an advantage rather than a threat. That is an interesting division, I think, that is made within this part of the show, because it does point towards our rationality side of the debate. I know I'm resurrecting this debate once again. It does lean towards rational and rational behavior, because it's knowing and understanding that someone with almost an insane amount of power that they wouldn't in their biggest dreams know that they'll be able to possess is now on their team. So do we just conform to our fear and ideology that Titans are bad, kill them, no Titans, or if there's a Titan we can mold and use to our advantage, do we instead use that? And they obviously do the latter. So good points for rationality there. Again, I still think it's not really a complete argument. There's no true winner. Just something I wanted to raise in today's episode. And yes, we'll talk about technical stuff now. So if you are referencing to the manga, I'm going to be talking more specifically about the anime and stuff like animation and those sorts of things. So you might feel slightly disconnected. Feel free to fast forward slightly and then you can get to the in the moment segment, closing thoughts and stuff. But now I'm going to be talking more strictly about the anime. In terms of Sakuga, I think there is some really promising stuff from this arc, which I didn't really realize or pick up on until I rewatched it. I didn't sit down and watch all or every episode of the Trost District arc at full speed. I skipped through it because I honestly don't have time to watch 8 or so episodes or 9 episodes at a time. But with that being said, I had a good time observing and soaking it all in. I can't give credit to everyone on the team, and I don't mean it because they haven't done their share. That is absolutely out of the question. They all have, but I can't go through a list of literally everyone that has done something on Shingeki's Trust District arc. So I'll just shout out or credit the director, Tetsuro Araki. Beautiful work on this season. I think it's one of my favorites, maybe visually. I think season one visually, although Attack on Titan as a whole is very visually promising, I can't push back and say, season two looks a bit worse than season. No, I don't think that. I love how Shingeki or Attack on Titan looks as a whole, but season one, I think, has some really special things within it, which I want to cover. One of the main things I think caught my eye is episode 12, and that is Wound, Struggle for the Trost, part 8. I don't think I appreciated how good the show looked at this point, and I've been watching Attack on Titan for a decent amount of time. I wouldn't say it started back in season 1, I was kind of catching up when I heard the season 3 announcement for the Uprising arcs, and I just watched most of it. It got announced around Comic-Con, I don't think it was related, but it was announced around then. I'm like, okay, I should watch this, and I kind of just caught up. I wasn't watching too much anime at that time, so it was pretty easy to do so. But you can see as you go through the seasons, visually the show, it doesn't change massively, but there's a bit of evolution between, say, this arc and the Female Titan arc, and then you compare it to, say, the Return to Shiganshina, which is the most recent anime arc at the moment. And I don't think I appreciated it as much as I do now. There was this one scene within this episode or part I really liked when they put it in parts as well. One of the cool things of season one. And that was when the landscape looked a bit more sort of 3D. And it gets tricky when we refer to 3D in anime, because the thing is, from what I've read, is that a lot of things that we don't think are in 3D and we assume, okay, this is 2D, this is 3D, a lot of them are animated using 3D software and we don't really realize it. That's sort of how good and developed it is. But when I say the term 2D, I mean something that evidently looks flat. And I say 3D, something that evidently looks like it has a third dimension. And I do, getting back to that point, I do like how the 2D contrasts with the 3D. That's not something I would usually say, but it's something I do appreciate this time. It adds a sense of depth to the environment, and it feels as if there are these characters within a more realistic world. Maybe I'm reading too far into it, I don't know. I'll get to my next point, and that is how the camera really does a lot of work within this anime. I discussed this with Vinland Saga as well. This is something which I would expect, because this is made by the same studio, so sort of similar production values I can see within both anime even. I think it did all start here from Attack on Titan though. The camera does a lot of work, and it's really cool when you consider the nature of the show and how they use grapples and they're moving across these buildings and across the districts and all of that. The camera doesn't just stand there and sit there. If anything, it's really active and works for the show. There are like these shots where the camera moves ahead of the grapple and then it twists around, watches Eren come through, goes back behind him, follows the grapple again, tracks all that. It was really pretty to see. The main person to give credit for when it comes to this part of Attack on Titan, or at least season one from what I know he does some work later on within the rest of the show, and that comes from key animator Arafumi Imai. Absolute beast at making these scenes look perfect for the show, and it doesn't feel bog standard. It doesn't feel as if a camera is just there for the sake of capturing the moment. It's there to capture Attack on Titan, and it's there to capture a high octane show. This part of the show as a whole, this anime, is rather high octane. It's rather sensationalist. It works on shock factor. And do I love that? No. But did I like how it was met and compensated for? Technically, yes. That's not to say sensationalism is a bad thing. If you want to hear more about sensationalism, I spoke about it a bunch within my decade review. I did like this though. I think I spoke a bit about it in the anime throughout the year review as well. But anyway, so back to today's episode. I'm not the biggest fan of sensationalism, but if you're going to do it right. And Attack on Titan does it right, visually and technically. And so I can only give it as much credit as it deserves, which is a lot. Eren entering Titan mode as well has some really strong visual elements. I really love how they were able to make the scenes quite special for Eren, because this is such a big moment. So when he goes to punch the Titan and the frame just pauses completely and you get that red outline for the punch, or the "this was a punch" this sort of thing, there's no voice. I would love to be the voice though for that shot. I did like that it had a sort of fighting game vibe to it. So when you land the final blow, or like a killing blow in, say, Smash Ultimate, and you get the red screen, or you land that final punch, it felt like that. It felt really satisfying. And that's kind of what I'm talking about when it comes to sensationalism and doing it right. There's high impact, and that's met for and it's not sort of brushed over. So Eren's sort of first Titan punch on a Titan, it's made a big deal. And not everybody would assume it to be a big deal, but if you're going to make it a big deal, show it off, exaggerate it. And it's not done in a silly way. It's like, oof, massive punch, but it's a big blow, and it's really shown how strong the punch is. As well as the animators, I think a lot of the credit goes to the storyboarders and the cinematographers and the vision behind all of this, even Iyasama for laying those sort of groundworks for this to happen. All of that sort of thought and effort and intentionality put into this arc, I think, is what makes it quite beautiful. And I know not everybody likes this arc particularly. Some people think it's a bit over the top. Some people think that Attack on Titan just gets better as you go forward, and maybe this is the okay part. And I kind of push back on that. I think I might as well just talk holistically about the show. I think this part is one of the best parts, and that's because it's really just different to what else we've experienced. I think as we go forward, the show becomes more nuanced and mature. That's not a bad thing at all. I like a mature show, but also it's nice to get a bit of a shock to your system, and you're just completely gasping throughout this entire arc. I don't feel as if I can sit down safely and just observe what's going on. I think that was the Uprising arc for me. It was a very different approach to Attack on Titan. I think that was sort of the growth or the birth of maturity within the show. It was a lot more, here's some understanding, here are some concepts, digest those, we'll feed you a bit of fighting, but understand these concepts because we're gonna have to go forward a bit more seriously from now on. That was the Uprising for me. But Battle of the Tross is just high impact, high impact, high impact. It's so high octane, but it's done well. I think that wraps it up for most of today's episode. Let's go to the In the Moment segment for this week to go on what I have been reading and watching. It's the holidays and things get mixed up, so I'm going to kind of talk about some things I did a bit before this week. I know I usually say at the beginning what I've been reading and watching this week, but I ignore that most of the time. It's just what I've been watching and reading in general most of the time. So anyway, so I'm going to discuss something I watched about, I think it was a week back, or at least finished a week back. I've tried to watch this while editing quite a bit, and I've faltered at times, not because I don't like it, but when you're really into editing, it's quite hard to watch something that's quite sad or really moving. So I'm gonna talk about that, and then my Berserk journey. This is turning into a journal. I might as well make a Berserk journey podcast. I'm not gonna do that, but we're going to talk about a bit about the Golden Age arc and its conclusion, because I've basically reached, I think I have like one or two more chapters left before going to the next arc. So those are two things we're going to speak about. First thing, The Grave of Fireflies. That's the movie I've been watching this period, really. And I think it's a very promising movie. I'm going to also come clean and say that I've watched a lot of short films before, and I've watched a lot of, I would say I've watched a decent amount of anime films from a variety of people, but I've watched quite a lot of Masaki Yusa at this point. I've watched a bit of Minamoto and a few others. But one thing I haven't done is I haven't watched much Miyazaki. I know that's kind of like a crime in the anime community. Like, you haven't watched at least 4 Studio Ghibli movies. I never know how to say Ghibli or Ghibli. I think it's Ghibli. Anyway, I haven't watched much Miyazaki. Again, I feel bad when I say that. I said that to a friend on Discord and they're like, what? You haven't seen like Princess Mononoke? I'm like, yeah, I haven't. The most Miyazaki I've watched is, and I'm just going to expose myself, is only Spirited Away and The Grave of Fireflies. That's bad, I know. It's not because I avoid Miyazaki. I think Miyazaki is a beautiful filmmaker and some of the best in the game from what I understand and see of it. But I just haven't come to it. And when it comes to anime and even manga, even philosophy in general, what I do is I don't watch it in terms of I'm going to watch this, this, and this. Sometimes I do that, but most of the time, it's kind of what leads me to something else. So if I watch maybe a Masaki Yusa series or something along the lines of that, I might end up just watching something else by Masaki Yusa because why not? Or if I watch a Minamoto movie or a short film or something like that, I'll probably end up watching 2 more short films by Minamoto to gain a feel. Maybe that will be Miyazaki since I've now watched Grave of Fireflies. I have quite a few more series I want to get down. I have Haikyuu to finish. I haven't done that in months. I have Mononoke, not Princess Mononoke, Mononoke to finish. I have Tengen Toppa Gurren Lagann to finish. Crime, I know I should have read that or watched that ages ago. I have to finish Bakuben and Hensuki. No, not Hensuki, Bakuben and Vow Love. All the harems this year. And a few more things. So I'm going to get to those. And then maybe I'll be watching some more Miyazaki. Anyway, so what did I think of the movie as a whole? I did like it. I did a bit of analysis because I'm planning on doing an episode really soon for The Grave of Fireflies, actually. Or sometime. It's on my radar, something I really want to do because this movie is worth talking about. I really did enjoy it because I'm not going to get into spoiler territory, but it's mostly its conclusion that I think is what makes this entire thing great. I speak a bit about that and how SSS's Gridman in terms of structure does almost a similar thing. My entire perspective of the movie has now changed because of the conclusion, mostly because it's almost doesn't have one. It's left in this open space where things just keep happening and things just keep going on and just sort of ends. That sounds like a criticism, but it's in fact a very big compliment. It's not something I would expect from someone like Miyazaki or just something like that. It's usually something really direct or it's a goal, it's an achievement, but there is no achievement here. That's something I want to discuss in the episode. I really liked its conclusion. The final shot as well, when kind of looks into the camera, is something that I analyzed really hard or I thought really hard about. I will probably be discussing that in a future episode, so stay tuned. And then we have Berserk. Berserk has been going crazy. The Golden Age arc, arguably the best manga arc of all time. Do I believe that? I'm not so sure yet. I think I have to keep reading Berserk to understand it relative to the other arcs. But with that being said, it has been crazy, crazy. All I'll say is that I think that Berserk is special, or people find this arc special, or at least I find it special, because when you look at it, once you finished it, it's completely different from where you once started. You started from a place of which was the Golden Age, where things were good, things were high and mighty. You know it's Berserk, and you just would have read the Black Swordsman arc, and you would know that things are obviously going to take a very bad turn. You already know how some things will be, now some things will turn out, but you don't know how you're going to get there. The Golden Age arc is kind of like, that's not happening yet, and then boom, it hits you. It tears itself open completely. It's forget everything you knew. This is gone. The good days are gone. The honeymoon is over, and it just ends. And everything, it's kind of like the EOE of a manga arc. That's how I kind of find it. I thought of it kind of like end of Evangelion. Evangelion builds you up to these ideas and then it's just tears the paper right in front of your face for you to just cry. That was me in the Golden Age arc. I was reading it while eating a snack in the kitchen in my house. And I was just like, the eclipse is coming. I was so scared. I was like, no, no, no. Absolute Mad Lad arc. I'm excited to progress within it because there are some more interesting things and we don't know where this is going. We have absolutely no idea where this is going, or at least I have no idea where this is going. So I'm really excited and I have my fingers crossed for some good things. That's going to do it for the In The Moment segment for this week. And with that, let me sell out. So if you do enjoy the show, feel free to give it a 5-star review on iTunes. We have one review. That is really positive. We have one review. I read that earlier in today's episode. I'm really happy. Thank you so much, Ash, for that lovely review. So if you do enjoy it, similarly to Ash, be sure to leave a 5-star review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts. Tell me what you think of it and I can read it out. I will try to probably read out a review when we get them. So thank you so much for your support. And anyway, here is the closing thoughts for today's episode. So before we talk about what I think of the arc, let's quickly just talk about where this arc leaves us by the end. So the breach has been patched up in the wall within Trost. That's a positive. Eren has been imprisoned, maybe not a positive, but maybe for the greater good as well. So there's some skepticism as he is a Titan. Going back to that debate on whether we should use him as an advantage or we should continue to justify our thoughts and fears and just validate ourselves that Titans are bad and that is the end of the story. And by the end, I did kind of move to this, and this is sort of the thing to end the debate temporarily for this episode, and that is, we get that final line from Eren. I don't remember the quote exactly, but it's him saying that I will kill all the Titans. You can see the lust within his face, or the bloodlust at least. His desire has prevailed over any sort of notion of I should, you know, stick with the scouts and win this war against the Titans for the sake of survival of humanity. It's driven off, although he does believe that, it's driven off killing and revenge and ideology, those sort of things. It's a radical approach as opposed to one that is thought out. So I did say instinct does prevail over rationality, but that is something that can be debated. And so with all of the analysis from today's episode, what do I think of the Battle of the Trost District arc? I like it, man. I like it a lot. It's sensationalism done right, and it's a debate that is planted here. Some seeds are planted here. It's nice to see how Iyesama lays everything out from the beginning, as opposed to just looking at what we've been doing on the podcast, just going right to the Shiganshina arc and talking and referencing back to all the seeds. It's nice to see the seeds being laid and how they're laid here strategically and then utilized as we have the benefit of hindsight. So the Battle of the Trost District arc has been a good one in my opinion. I'm ready to see how this is going to grow in the Female Titan arc and beyond. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Guest in the Mecha. That has been episode 24. It's been a really long time we've been doing this podcast. It doesn't feel like it though. Episode 24 already. I remember when I was recording the 10 episodes that I was going to do pre-launch. I released about 6, but I can still remember doing that on my Samsung Q2U. And now here we are, episode 24. It's been a great ride and I'm happy to have you guys with me here. So that's it for this episode. I have been your host Jamal today, and this has been Get in the Mecha. The music in this production goes as follows: Warden by Alex McCulloch, 8-bit title screen by Joth, Mandatory Overtime by Joth, Difference by Chasers Gaming, Go Lucky by Chasers Gaming, and Anomaly by Eric Medeas under soundimage.org.